And our special guest this hour, Jeffrey Doherty. We're going to take phone calls, stories, and questions as well as we talk about demons and exorcisms tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Jeffrey Doherty with us, author of Confessions of an Exorcist. And Jeffrey, when you perform an exorcism, are you wearing, you know, priestly type garb, or what do you wear?
No, George, I don't wear any type of garb, and none of that whatsoever. I just wear whatever I'm wearing. I mean, you know, whatever's weather appropriate, and, you know, typically you wear something that's fairly comfortable, but no garb, no accoutrements, you know, really no equipment of any kind, just as I am.
Holy water?
No, I don't use any type of accoutrements or any type of aids or tools, so to speak. None of that. And George, really, you know, what that does as far as, you know, actually affecting the spirit itself, the demon, if you will, the demon couldn't care less if you're wearing a ceremonial robe or if
you're a tuxedo.
Naked. Yeah, it doesn't care at all. But what happens is, you know, people that do feel that they should wear the garments, that do feel they should use, you know, holy water or whatever tools, those tools help the power of their intention. And those tools basically sometimes work because that person really believes that those tools are going to work. Demons, they couldn't care less, George, either way. It's not about the tools. It's about the power of the intention of the exorcist.
Have you ever, in an attempt to perform an exorcism, failed where you weren't able to get that demon out of the person?
Well, only in the cases where people did not want the demon out. I talked about the lady on the grate. You know, that mistake still haunts me to this day because, George, you know what happened to that poor lady afterwards. I wasn't able to follow up. I did the lady with the shadow man, actually. I was in a romantic relationship with her, and it was interesting. This is another kind of a spiritual lesson that demons are subject to the authority of a place. Like in that situation, that was this lady's house. That shadow man was there. And when I woke up and saw him in the middle of the night, I told you before, he's very atypical. I saw him standing there. And most shadow men, you know this, George, that they're rather large. They always have some type of a hat or a hood. This shadow man was very small, kind of frumpy looking, no hat. I'm like, what is going on with this shadow man? And as you know, shadow men are typically very aggressive, but this one was not aggressive. Of course, he manifested to try to intimidate me. He was a very malevolent, jealous spirit regards this lady who was my girlfriend at the time. But he was very careful not to engage me because what he was trying to do, George, is stay under the authority of the lady of the house. And I learned that lesson from the lady on the grate all those years ago and from another situation I had in a church, where demons, and we're going to use that word because that's what people can relate to,
sure.
Demons are actually subject to the authority of the person that owns a place. So if I were to cast that shadow man out, he could have gone out and got reinforcements to come right back because that lady wanted him to stay, is what I found out. Basically, she dumped me for the demon, George, was long story short.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, exactly. So I've never failed, quote unquote, to cast out a demon unless the person that was asking me or that I thought needed to have cast out said, no, we don't want him to go. I mean, our authority under the divine is more than any type of an entity is able to withstand, unless, again, there is an authority in that place that they are subject to that wants them to stay there. Does that make sense, George?
It sure does. It sure does. Now, with these demons that hang around, again, with the individual, what does the individual do to have this demon occupy their body? Are they drunk? Are they on drugs? How do they let their guard down?
Well, this one person that I'm referencing with the shadow man, and it was interesting. This is a very smart person, entrepreneurial, smart, sharp as a tack, very, very intelligent, very beautiful, just a salt of the earth, a number one type of person. But this person also had this habit of saying, I really wish I could be abducted by aliens. I really wish I could be abducted by aliens. And when you're putting out that type of a confession and you're putting out that type of intention, if you advertise that, George, it's not going to be very long at all before someone answers that advertisement.
Yeah, and picks up on it. Absolutely.
Picks up on it. And I think that's what happened in her case. Plus, you know, she was a single mother. That has its own set of challenges, and my hat is off to all single mothers. But she felt like she needed some protection. She felt like she needed some companionship. And this thing that was a shadow man, I've never seen a shadow man do it, George, but he was impersonating, at least to her, a deceased past male relative of hers. So she said, hey, he's protecting me. And I just couldn't explain to her, yes, he's protecting you, but it's malevolent. It's possessive. He's driving all the men in your life out. But smart lady, you know, great lady, but she just had that something in her that said, you know what, I want him here, and George, they can stay.
How do you know when they're tricking you?
You know what, that's again, a fantastic question, and there's two answers to that, George. Number one, I think we all are equipped with what I call a spiritual blink. It's a couple of things. It's physical, it's mental, it's psychological, it's our amazing brain, you know, from the time that we draw our first breath and maybe even before in the womb, it's taking in every bit of data and stimulus and information that we've ever received. And each and every situation that comes along, it automatically spits out an answer to us. And I call that our blink, but so many times we override that with our intellect. It's like the classic example of, you change your answer on the test, and almost always what happens, George, it's wrong. You changed it from the right answer, right?
Exactly.
So the main thing is, you know, you will hear, you will get that blink. You'll literally, you know, you'll have the hair stand up on the back of your neck. My hair is very long. I've been growing it because I believe it is an extension of your spiritual nervous system, if you will. So you'll have that blink. You'll know, and you just have to learn to trust that blink. And the other thing, George, there's really no teacher like experience. You just have to do it, and the more you do it, the more you understand, the more you've seen their games. And until this shadow man, I would have always said to you that demons are rather plotting, they're rather methodical, they don't really change their strategies and tactics because there's no need to. So once you learn it, and once you have some experience, and once you're over that fear and that worry so you can process objectively, it really becomes very elementary, George, and that's my lesson. You can learn to do it. You don't need an exorcist. You can take care of your own business. It's very, very easy to learn.
All right, let's take some calls here for you, Jeffrey. Let's go to James in Texas, east of the Rockies, to get things going. Hi, James.
Hello, George. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello there, James. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. I've been trying to get through to a show like this for a long time. I actually got through a few years ago. I myself believe that I am possessed. And my grandmother, when I was a child, actually claims to have done an exorcism on me. But I don't believe it's worked. I've had something with me most of my life, and it's really destroyed my life completely.
What are some of your symptoms, James, if you could just tell us that first?
Well, number one, I'm very good at fooling people. I can be the most compassionate, most awesome person that you would know, but secretly I am full of rage. I have completely destroyed my own life, and nobody is aware of this other than myself. I am very self-destructive. I just don't know exactly where to go with that, George.
All right, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Okay, James. I mean, even in this is a moment of honesty for yourself, and you don't even have to answer this, but just thinking in yourself to yourself. I mean, when you're lying on your bed at night and it's just you, is there any part of you that, you know, I'm going to ask you, wants to keep it? You're going to say, "Oh no, of course not." But is there any part of you that likes the attention that you get by this, or do you feel that it makes you special in any sort of way? Is there any kind of twisted, hidden thing that makes you want to keep this entity?
I don't think so. I don't know any part of my life without it because I've had it so long and I've known it's there. It was given to me, I know that. And the person that actually put it in my life, I absolutely loathed. So I don't know any other way of life.
You don't have to tell us what happened, James. I understand exactly what happened to you. I understand the situation. And there's some very simple things that you can do. This thing is all built up and staying with you because of your tremendous sense of guilt, your tremendous sense of self-loathing, your tremendous sense of shame. And the easiest way for you to do it, and Dr. Turi has been on the show a bunch of times, shared this with me, and it works so fantastically. Do you understand what the hue is, James? Are you familiar with that at all?
From the pineal gland? Is that what you're talking about?
Whenever you feel that this entity on you, I want you to do this.
It's a sound.
Sounds silly, sounds crazy, but it's the most effective thing I've ever seen, James. When you feel this entity coming on you, it's like the man's name, Hugh. I just want you to say, Hugh, draw it out as long as you can, do it over and over, and that will find you, give you relief. It's very profound. And also, James, I want you to do this. Each time before you go to bed at night, and also when you think about it through the day, start asking yourself questions like, how can I feel better about myself? How can I feel stronger about my personality? How can I feel better about myself as a person? How can I become better? How can I feel better? Because the questions that you ask yourself, James, automatically start working in your spirit and in your mind, and they start feeding you answers. Don't ask yourself, why am I such a piece of crap? Don't ask yourself, why am I always doing so wrong? Don't ask yourself, how have I destroyed my life? Ask yourself, how can I begin to make things right? How can I fix my life? How can I help myself? You do those two things, James, and when I'm back on here in a few months, you call back, and I guarantee you your life will be turned around for the better.
All right, good luck to you, James, indeed. What percent of people out there do you think might be possessed, Jeffrey? Small percent?
Full-blown possessed, George, or deal with entities on some
Well, that's
level?
A good question. Maybe both.
Okay. I would say, you know, there's a recent study out that said 60% of people think that they have had contact with past loved ones, and you know how surveys are. I would say there's probably a significant, maybe 40% of people that do deal with entities on some level, harassment, some of it even curiosity, but actually full-blown possessed, got to have an exorcist come help you. If it were above 2-3%, George, I'd be very surprised.
Okay, yeah, I would think that too, maybe even less.
Exactly. Infinitesimal, really.
Let's go to Casey in Nebraska on the wild card line. Hello, Casey.
Hi there. Well, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Case. Thank you.
Well, I was calling in because, of course, you guys are talking about, you know, I just heard you say exorcisms and such. And it so happened I sat in on one. It wasn't, you know, an official exorcism, but it was, you know, the closest thing we could get out here. Well, my buddy, he's with me tonight, the one that it happened to, and we had all our questions to ask, like, are there things, do you get rid of it entirely? Do they follow you?
Or
like
all
that.
Of the above, Jeffrey?
Yeah, those are very good questions, and yes, you can get, you know, if you have an exorcist, and, you know, I don't even like that term, if you have a person that knows what they're doing, and ideally, Casey, you learn how to do it yourself, and you don't have to call for other people, and it's really pretty easy to learn. But if you have somebody that knows what they're doing, you can immediately, you know, if The Exorcist was a movie that, well, anyway, we won't go there, but it can be done very, very simply, very, very easily, very, very quickly. And the entities do leave, but like Yeshua said, they will come back knocking on the door and see if they can get back in. And when they get back in, you know, they find everything clean and swept, because usually if the exorcist has done a good job, you're completely empty of any type of spiritual attachments, and that makes a great place for, you know, this spirit and the other ones that it's grounded up to come back in. So, yes, you can and should be completely, totally cleansed, if you will, But you also have to remain vigilant. And if you know that you were doing things that subjected you or put you in places, or if you know that you were, you know, projecting types of thoughts or intention that were difficult or that were problematic, you need to, you know, take responsibility and not do that. And, you know, that hue is, I mean, it sounds silly. You think that it's silly doing it, but I've been doing this 30 years, my friends, and I have never found another technique as effective as that. And if you'll do that, I mean, I do it all the time, and man, I'm 10 feet tall and bulletproof in this area, and you can be too.
What did Sir Isaac Newton have to do about any of this with demons? How did he pop up?
George, what an amazing story. I've always been a history buff, and I've always been, you know, a guy that likes to read a lot. And what people don't understand about Sir Isaac Newton, you know, they know that he's the guy that, you know, sat under the tree and the apple fell, and he, you know, gave us our understanding of gravity. They know he's a great physicist, a great scientific mind. But what they don't know about Sir Isaac Newton is that he was a tremendous theologian, a very unorthodox theologian, but he was a tremendous theologian. He was an alchemist. He was into deep, deep spirituality. And George, as synchronicity being as it is, just today in the news, they released announced a study, or they announced the finding of a manuscript, a big book of Sir Isaac Newton's manuscripts that showed very clearly his interest in things alchemical, his things spiritual, his things theological. And Newton, through his studies and through his understanding of energy, came to believe that there was no such thing as a devil, no such thing as demons. He came to believe, and this is what I wholeheartedly believe, and kind of came to it to Newton after kind of getting this idea in my own head, is that there's really just energy, George. Everything around us is energy. The table we're sitting at, we're energy. And energy in and of itself is neither good nor evil. It's just energy. But energy can be balanced and it can be unbalanced.
That's right.
And what Newton codified, and you see, when Newton was writing, you couldn't just come on coast to coast and say the kind of things we say, because if you did, you know what happened to you, George? You got killed. You weren't allowed to make
these. They burned you. They hung you. They did something to you.
Absolutely. But Newton wrote in his private journals, which have become public over the years, he wrote that there are no demons, but there is unbalanced energy. And his third law is actually a spiritual application of the idea of what you resist tends to persist. You know, the third law, we all know it, we don't know about that name sometimes, but the third law says that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And then, of course, the spiritual saying is what you resist continues to persist. So as long as we're fighting demons, George, as long as we're battling spirits, there will continue to be a war. That guarantees that there will be a war. But when we realize it's just energy, it's unbalanced energy, what Newton taught us is if unbalanced energy is coming at us, we can project balanced energy towards it, like with the hue. And the reason the hue works is because it's a energetic harmonic frequency that will balance unbalanced energy. And that's what these entities are. They're just unbalanced energy. We unbalance the energy. The divine imperative drives it back to us, and it'll keep driving it back to us until we recalibrate it, rebalance it. And the best way to do that I found is through the hue. And what Newton taught us was if you project balanced energy at an unbalanced entity, it will balance out. It's the yin and the yang, the positive and the negative, the balance and the unbalance, and it snaps back into harmony, if you will.
All right, hold on, Jeffrey. At the break, we'll be back with more. And welcome back. Jeffrey Doherty with us, of course. He's the author's latest work, Confessions of an Exorcist. How many books do you have out now, Jeffrey?
Oh, let's see, George. I have about 6 out right now. Just one quick note, if I may, about James's call.
Yeah.
Obviously a great guy, you know, under some real trauma.
And stress, too, you can tell.
Absolutely. And as he was talking to me, the universe whispered in my ear exactly what the event was that caused him to have the trauma. And I think he was about to share it, and there was no need for him to have to relive that or share it with your huge audience. So that's why I stepped in and said, James, I understand what happened. here's what you do. You know, we're always trying to do everything we can to make it as easy for the folks, the great folks that listen to this program.
Okay. Let's go to Colleen in Red Bluff, California. First time caller. Hello, Colleen. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a question. I was married to somebody for a long time that it was domestic violence, pretty bad, like really bad. And is there any like thing that gets stuck inside of me? I mean, like we've been divorced for a long time too, but at the same time, I feel like I'm kind of messed up and just down on myself and not be just feeling stuck. And I don't know if that has anything to do with the entity or not.
I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Colleen.
Colleen.
Colleen, you know, that is such a profound question and statement that you've made. And I almost shared that earlier, and I was talking about the situation with the beautiful lady and the shadow man, because what you have hit on, Colleen, is a huge thing that I've seen over and over and over in 30 years of doing this work. People that have been subject to domestic violence, and of course, it's all bad. There's no kind of domestic violence or sort of, it's all bad. And people that have been subjected to that, I have noticed that they tend to be somehow open to entities coming into them. Sometimes entities that will say, I'm going to protect you. Sometimes entities that say, that's all right. They want to put their arm around you, so to speak. And you just have to understand and realize that, number one, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. You're completely and totally the victim in that situation. It was an evil perpetrated upon you. And if anybody should worry about repercussions and ramifications, it would be the person that's low down enough to perpetrate that type of violence upon you. So you made a profound discovery, very, very profound understanding of what's going on. So now that you're armed with that, your battle is over, Colleen. You've figured it out. You've broken the code. So now you know what's going on, and you know that you can, again, ask yourself the great questions. You know, how can I get better? How can I get stronger? You know, how can I know that it's not my fault? And you can use the you can keep yourself and your intentions and your confessions positive. And I'm very excited for you because, again, you've broken the code and the victory is already yours. It's just the living out of it. Does that make sense, Colleen?
A little bit. The man that I was married to actually just died last year. And, I mean, we haven't been married for a long time. And I felt a little bit of freedom. I don't know if that's very nice to say or not. Hmm. But I did feel a little bit of freedom because it's like finally that part was gone. But, I mean, it was, like you said, it's all ugly and it's not good and it was bad. But there was times in the marriage where I felt like he had actually sold out to the devil, you know, like he sold his soul.
Sure, that happened.
And, yeah, and I'm just like, I don't want it to be connected to me because that's not me.
You know, Colleen, that's the real world. You know, you feel some relief because something that was causing you pain is, you know, no longer on this plane, so to speak, and it is definitely not connected to you. And you just have to remember that and hold on to that and continue to move forward in your life. You sound like a, you know, very wonderful person. You're listening to the show, so you obviously have a depth of spiritual understanding. So move forward knowing that it has nothing to do with you. There's not anything, you know, connected to you just because of something that was perpetrated on you. You are free. You know, tell yourself you're free and continue to live in your freedom and enjoy the fact that you've become even more free, and just move on with forgiveness and don't allow bitterness to dominate your heart or your mind. And again, I feel very, very inspired and happy for you. I think that you're on the right road, Colleen.
Jeffrey, if you have lived a righteous life, if you're a good person, I mean a darn good person, can you still be subjected to a demon trying to possess you?
Well, I think you can, George, because, I mean, the very best of us, I mean, people like Colleen, she sounds like just a saint of a lady. I mean, if you there's so many times, like even James said, you put forth, you know, we're one way in public and there's another us, you know, in private. And if, you know, a perfect, you know, wonderful, righteous, moral person, if they start putting out, you know, projections and, you know, bad intentions and bad energy. You know, I'm so lonely. Why am I so stupid? You know, why doesn't anybody love me? We open ourselves up to having entities that feed on that energy. We have to realize that these entities, some of them are there to scare us because they feed on fear, but there's a great number of them, George, that feed on, sadness, and even those that feed on love and worship that will want to, you know, con us into a relationship where they're basically vampirizing us and pretending to, you know, be helpful to us, even though they're really just there to suck our energy away. So we have to, every one of us is as strong and as moral as we are, we do need to be eternally vigilant because, again, this universe is all energy. And, you know, what we put out is going to come back to us. So let's just be vigilant and let's either create, palaces for ourselves or prisons. And let's make sure that we're creating palaces and not prisons.
We're with Jeffrey Doherty, author of Confessions of an Exorcist. And let's go to Gordon in Lakeland, Florida now. Hi, Gordon. What do you got for us?
Hey, thank you for taking
sure
my
thing.
George and Jeffrey. And thank you for making this, making people of all different beliefs welcome. I'm one of those right-wingers that trust in the Bible and Jesus as the authority. And I have a question about Deuteronomy 18:10-12, and then, of course, Matthew 17:21. In the Old Testament, it says that we should not be among those who contact the dead. And I know that the dead sometimes contact us, but I don't think that it's appropriate. And the second question is, Jesus said that this type of demon goes out not by any other means but by fasting and prayer, Matthew 17:21, Mark 9:29. And he also spoke of faith. And my two questions are, if I could, one, how is it that you say it's all right for us to initiate contact with the dead in violation of Deuteronomy 18:10, 11, and 12? And secondly, how exactly does fasting, faith, and the ability to cast out that really difficult type of demon work? And, oh, if I could squeeze a third question in, what about the authority of Jesus and people like the seven sons of Sceva that try to cast out a demon without actually having the authority of Jesus?
Let's go with just those, okay? Go ahead, Jeffrey.
Well, I did some of my Bible college studies at Southeastern College in Lakeland, Florida, so we may not be as far apart as the caller thinks, but the second question first about Yeshua talking about this type only comes out by prayer and fasting. And again, synchronicity, George, it's so interesting. I was just studying this in great depth and great detail. And what people don't realize and understand, we've got this about 180 degrees backwards. We've always thought that Yeshua was saying that the disciples couldn't cast that demon out because they needed to fast and pray more. And it just never made sense to me because the disciples of Jesus were some of the most praying guys around. They were some of those devoted guys around. And as I got into the Greek and broke it down, George, what Yeshua was really saying was, yes, these kinds only come out by prayer and fasting, but it's prayer and fasting on the part of the victim, George, the one that's possessed, not the exorcist. It's very similar to the lady on the grate and the lady with the shadow man. Sometimes you have to subdue your flesh a little bit, fast, pray, meditate, until you realize, hey, wait a minute, this spirit isn't trying to help me. This spirit isn't trying to comfort me. This is a stinking shadow man. And sometimes it takes prayer and fasting on the part of the possessed, not on the part of the exorcist. So that's the answer to that question. And, of course, Deuteronomy 18:10-12, you know, we may have to agree to disagree on this one, but you know, my problem would be if I want to stick strictly with that verse, then what do I do with the verses in the New Testament that Peter very clearly says that Yeshua went into the spirit realm and preached evangelistically, George, preached messages of salvation to people that already had died and that were still in bondage due to what they were taught in this life. And then how do we reconcile Peter saying not only did Yeshua did do it, but the disciples did it, and Yeshua saying, hey, look, the things that I've done, even greater things, will you do? And to me, you know, we've talked about this before, the Bible is a great study. It has a great bunch of knowledge. It has a lot of diamonds. But George, there's also some dung in there, and we have to balance and study and come to our own convictions and conclusions about many things.
And let me ask you about this. If you haven't been ordained to do this, perform an exorcism, it will still work. I mean, look at you, right?
Absolutely, George. I mean, Yeshua said, I mean, we all agree that Yeshua cast out demons, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was part of his work. And he said very clearly, the things that I do, you're going to do. And then he also said, greater things than these will you do. And if you get into the Greek, George, that greater things means you will do things that everybody says are crazy, that are beyond the comprehension of the normal mind. Things like going into the spiritual realm, George, and preaching evangelistically to people that have already dead. Crazy stuff that you should.
It happens.
We'd be doing.
Let's go to Brandon in Philadelphia. Hey, Brandon, thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you so much for taking my call.
That's okay.
I really believe that God has definitely intervened here. I was praying for it. Anyway, I'm just calling in reference because I think that Jeffrey, you might be able to maybe steer me in the right direction here. But I actually had an experience about 3 years ago with I was in West Virginia living at the time, and I was in my. There was a time where I was out of my apartment. I had to get it. I was waiting for the new lease to be signed to be able to move in. And I was living with my friend, and she had a severe drinking problem. And I've had experiences with demons before. Like, I feel like I'm just more in tune with it than most people.
Right.
And there was a knocking that just kept waking us up right around the same time, usually at 9 o'clock. Like, 3 in the morning, sometimes 2, 1, and we were night owls, so we were up usually during the night hours, and we worked at nights at the gas station up the street.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kept coming on, like, same time every night for about, I don't know, 2 weeks. And I started getting, weird feelings, like something was with us, and we didn't understand what it was. So I pulled out my Bible. I'm a Christian. And I was like, all right, let me just start praying because, you know, I've had experiences like this before and it just didn't seem right to me. And as soon as I started praying and started getting into the Word, the knocking got more and more intense, and then you hear like a screeching noise. And I have it on video. It's on my YouTube. I have a YouTube video on it of the actual encounter. And it got to the point where it just kept getting more and more severe. And every time I would pray, and I knew this, I was on to something here, it started getting more intense, and it would actually follow me. So not only was it on the ceiling, the knocking, it was then on the counter. Wherever I would move, it would follow me, like on the walls, the floor. It was weird. And
what if you left the house, Brandon? Did it follow you out of the house, you particularly?
Yeah, and this is the thing. So when she was about to fall asleep, she had said, oh my gosh. And she said, she looked over and she saw this big giant shadow in between the door frame, and it had a hat on, giant thing. And I looked at the corner of my eyes and I saw it, and then it just disappeared. And ever since that moment, I've been really kind of having some weird stuff happening. And even like just recently, this last year, my girlfriend and I were driving down to Florida, and, she had said she felt something behind me in the car, and she looked back and she almost thought she could see like a shadowy figure, but she couldn't tell for sure. And we've had a lot of weird experiences with knockings and all sorts of stuff, even in my own house. So I feel like, yeah, it's following me. And I don't know if I had opened the door for trying to like antagonize it by, you know, trying to cast it out or what.
Let's get your take, Jeffrey, because we've only got a couple minutes left.
All right, George, I'll rush through this. And classic Shadow Man scenario. Shadow Man, in my experience, are almost exclusively, you know, possessive, jealous entities, and they seem to deal mainly with the ladies. And I found that people that, you know, are over imbibing in any type of a intoxicating substance, you do lower your resistance, if you will, towards, you know, that type of a spirit. So it's not at all surprising that she would have a shadow man. And of course, in her house, again, we talked about this earlier, she's the authority of the house, so his ability to, you know, cast that demon out, if you want to put it in that terms, was limited because it was her authority. But yet his trying to do so, you know, of course, caused the jealous, possessive shadow man to turn against him, and it sounds like successfully drive him out. And, you know, whether Brandon just thinks that it's that same shadow man, there probably is something or someone that, you know, maybe continuing to try to oppress him because he knows he's a man of faith and that he did cross paths with that shadow man. So it's kind of a, you know, a revenge type of thing. But, you know, I would encourage Brandon, you know, not to abandon his faith at all, but maybe to look beyond just simple fundamental Christianity for some other answers, because I think that truth is truth, and certainly don't give up your faith, but don't turn down any bullets that you could put in your spiritual gun, to use a kind of a base analogy.
Name of Jeffrey's book, Confessions of an Exorcist, and of course his website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. When I come back now, 2 hours of Friday night into Saturday morning open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM.